Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on hatred for the enemy. They have the policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media and just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them. Straight from Mike P.
Jump on your bike, let's hit the road.
Come on.
Fuck the 5-0, man, we out of control. Hey. I'm a bad motherfucker, riding through the night. Hey. A filthy motherfucker and I love to fight. Picture me rolling on my chopper on rims. No love for the other side, no need to be friends. Hit the gas, homie, you gotta keep on pushing. Got an out, cheer, check the dose, and need an ass. Put the ticket at the ticket, man, I ain't gonna pay. Another dude 30 days locked up in CJ. Let's twist the throttle, let's hit the rolling. My drag lights on my bike, get the blow in. A thug motherfucker street calling me. Like a mom calls the kids when it's time to eat. Come on. Approach me, homie, like the shit all good. I'm like half the motherfuckers that live in my hood. I'm a 10-year rolling to the mold. With 10 in the clip and 1 in the hole. Fuck what you heard, homie, I'ma always hit a bar. My homeboys might rubble, but we never ever fall. At the end of the day, we can always stand tall. The gov don't like me, yo, fucking well. I guess you can call me the angel from hell.
Everybody, what's going on?
Hey, well, somebody sent me a message. She had to go pee. Why wait?
Great. So you just let everybody know it, huh?
Why not?
Hey.
They don't know who it is.
Oh, I thought you said Nora. Oh! That's why I was like, huh? Oh, man. So how's Bill?
Yeah, he's going to be here Thursday.
Awesome, awesome.
He says he's almost back to normal today when I saw him.
Nice, very good.
How my you brother, doing?
Oh, last week was a rough week. Oh, yeah, I'm better, you know, but I think I overdid it and it caught up with me. So I was pretty much, you know, laid out, but better this week, you know. I just got to learn to chill, you know. I mean, it hasn't even been a month since surgery, and I just need to, you know my limitations.
Yeah.
So,
well, you got to learn to pick your battles, too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, where is Nora? She's not with us tonight?
She probably went to pee.
Oh, my God. So, who went to pee? Was it Nora or somebody else?
Got a caller on Skype. Hello? Whoever it is, it sounds like they're eating.
Yeah, I was just about to say, it sounds like, you know, they're nibbling on a little something.
Yeah, never know.
Hey, don't go there.
Huh?
I said, don't go there now.
No.
So, what's a good word out there in Californiaville?
Oh, yesterday. You didn't watch it?
It depends.
The Devil's Ride?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I can't stand that show. I, you know, no disrespect to anybody, you know, but I don't like that show at all.
No.
I think it just gives a bad name to bikers in general, and it stereotypes, you know, clubs, and it just, I don't like that show. I don't want to say too much because I know it walks a very fine line on people's opinions and stuff, but, you know, the difference between that, it's a reality show, so people think that it's, like, legit.
No.
I'll take Sons of Anarchy any day because you know it's a drama, you know it's scripted, et cetera, but people just don't know, you know, that reality TV can be just as much bullshit as, you know, anything else you watch. But, yeah, no, I don't watch that show.
Well,
I just don't want to give it one more rating, you know?
Yeah.
Not for me. Did
no,
you watch?
That knucklehead Sandman, he, you heard what he did over Christmas, right?
That depends.
Well, I guess he had a restraining order. He wasn't supposed to go to his house. When he got to his house, he let himself in and he heard his wife moaning in the bedroom.
Yeah.
He thought something was wrong, so he ran in there. He stabbed a guy in the back who was fucking his wife.
Oh, my God. Oh.
Oh, yeah. So now he's up the creek without a paddle. And,
yep.
And they played last night, if you watched the show, they played a bunch of shit that he said that it's going to go against him when he goes to court.
Wow.
He's a loose cannon.
Yep, and loose lips sink ships, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I just think that show is bad news altogether, you know? And I just stay away from it. It's not for me. I mean, it could be for several different other people, but just not for me.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to give a shout-out, Phil.
Go ahead.
I want to shout-out to Miles in California. He thinks my accent is the shizits.
Huh?
Yeah, he's always telling me he's tuning into the show just to listen to my accent. How do you like that? So, sending lots of love to Miles. You're the man. You're awesome. And that's it.
Yeah, we're waiting for, she must have fell in.
God, maybe she's having tea with the Tidy Bowl Man.
I don't know.
Where's Erna tonight?
Who?
What's the Erna.
Eunice?
No, that's Eunice. I'm calling her Erna. Oh, my God, Eunice, yeah. is she calling in?
She probably will, but you didn't hear what she said last week.
I wasn't with you guys last week. I was sick.
Oh, no, there was a felony hot stop in front of her, and a guy stood up, ran up next to her car with a gun in his hand, and she literally peed in her pants.
Oh, my God, that's terrible.
Yeah, scared the piss right out of her, she said.
Oh, my God. Poor thing, she's lucky she didn't have a damn heart attack. Oh, my God.
No.
That's horrible. She okay?
Yeah. Yeah, the week before that, she was going to assault somebody, so, you know.
Yeah, no, that I know. Her in the hospital and the crazy woman down the hallway ringing the bell. Yeah, she shared that with all of us. Oh, my goodness. No kidding. I'm surprised she didn't get out of the car and whack him in the head with her purse or something.
But, so they, you know, they got these guys. They're bringing in different things, and they had a showdown in the alley.
Yeah.
San Diego PD car pulled up and told them to break it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was all, it's all fucking rehearsed.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, I think the second episode, a certain rap singer from California's music airs on the second show.
Oh, no, it was on last night.
Oh, was it on last night? All right, well, I hope his CD, album, whatever you want to call it, you know, goes sky high, because I thoroughly enjoy his music, but I just can't stand that show. You know, too bad it wasn't on something else, because you could put his music just about on anything. You know,
you could.
As long as the scene is right, you know?
Absolutely. In fact, let me see here real quick.
It's pouring over here, dude. I'm, like, up in my room, and it's up by the roof, and that's all I can hear is the rain coming down. Tomorrow morning, there should be no snow left anywhere with all this rain. We might all have floods in our basements, but...
Yeah. Now, he's doing some East Coast stuff. I put it up on the blog. I forget the dates, but he's going to be doing the East Coast.
Yeah, and he's no Mass and Rhode Island dates listed yet. They were trying to, because I had sent a shout-out to somebody, and I was like, you know, everybody always comes this way, but they always skip over Mass and Rhode Island, and from my understanding, they were trying to get some dates in Massachusetts, but I haven't seen anything yet, because, you know, I'm willing to travel 2 hours, you know, because that's about the furthest extent, you know. If I were to go further into Massachusetts, it would be like a 2-hour travel, you know, and then the state ends. So, you know, but, yeah, absolutely. But they always go to, like, New York, New Jersey, you know, places that are, like, 6 and 8, 10 hours away. And I got my mom I take care of and stuff, so it's like I can't be long-hauling it, you know?
Yeah. Well, here, I'll give everybody a taste of Mike's stuff. This Mike P, the big homie. This one's called Bump My Hits. Be right back.
It's Mike P and Sal Capone. It's that real little music, man. And this is our single. You know they say bump it all in.
Turn it up.
Back when a full clip show.
Anything else?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite songs.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a bad song. I like it.
Yeah, I wanna say to those guys, sorry about Don. May he rest in peace. They lost guys unexpectedly.
No doubt. Yep, I was reading things on that today, and it's hot. It's gonna be heartbreaking for people.
Yeah.
You know, without getting into too much detail. Where the hell is Nora, man? Did you call her? Did you text her?
No.
Where'd she go?
I don't know, but we got some stuff going on out here. You know, like in Nebraska, we got a bill that'll allow motorcyclists to go through red lights under conditions. And then in California, they got a thing going now. The CHP just came out with some rules for splitting lanes.
Really? What kind of new rules?
I'll tell you that here in a minute.
What state? I don't mean to cut you off, but what state is that that's allowing motorcycles to go through red lights if conditions?
Illinois got it. California, certain areas. So far, it's making its way across the United States.
Do you think it's healthy?
Yeah, I mean, if you've ever sat on your bike in a left turn lane for three lights, yeah.
Okay.
You know, I usually give it two and then I turn.
Because I'm just worried about, you know, somebody coming in the opposite direction and.
Oh no! You wait your turn.
Okay.
But California, the Highway Patrol, they just came out with a thing on how to split lanes safely. So one of the privileges of living in the Golden State, apart from the fact that life in California is already pretty swell, is the fact that lane sharing on a motorcycle isn't legally prohibited, unlike the other 49 states in the U.S. I frequently split lanes when I'm riding Southern California roads, and through the practice assessment, without its close calls and occasional consequences, my experience of cutting through traffic has mostly been efficient and relatively stress-free. Because the Highway Patrol has historically been vague about lane sharing and tons of misconceptions about the legality and prudence of squeezing between cars, the CHP has released these five guidelines for successful lane splitting. Now, number one is travel at a speed that is no more than 10 miles an hour faster than other traffic. Danger increases at higher speed differentials. Number two is it's not advisable to lane split when traffic flow is at 30 miles an hour or faster. Danger increases as overall speed increases. Number three is typically it's safer to split between the one and two lanes than between other lanes. Consider the total environment in which you are splitting, including the width of the lane, size of surrounding vehicles, and as well as roadway, weather, and lighting conditions. Number five, be alert and anticipate possible movements by other road users. CHP has expanded an explanation of these points on their website, and I'll put that link up in the chat room.
Man, I'd be afraid to ride, period, if I lived out there in California. You guys have got so many rules and regulations, and it seems like they're always trying to change them or pull one of you guys over and mess with you. I don't get it.
Yeah, I got something else that happened over here last weekend. I'll get to that in a minute.
What did you do?
Nothing.
Right.
No, I didn't. I'll read the email to you. And also suggest following by their 4 hours of lane splitting. Reasonable, responsible, respectful, and be aware of all roadway and traffic conditions. But the thing I appreciate the most of this particular message from law enforcement is that it places responsibility into the hands of riders with logical, reasonable advice. What do you think? Does that make you want to move to California or what?
Maybe to visit, but I don't know, man. You guys have got coppers in the air, and you've got coppers on motorcycles, and you got all kinds of crazy shit that I just ain't used to.
Texas is thinking about lane sharing. So is Arizona, and Oregon too.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think about it?
Me? Oh, I do it daily.
Oh, well.
Just got joined by Nora. She's unmuted.
Finally, Nora, man. How was tea and biscuits with the Tidy Bowl, man?
Well, I not only had to do that, I had to let the dogs out and let them back in. And yeah, we're getting ready for our first snowstorm of the season. Yay.
Oh, it's raining here. Man, the rain's trying to get rid of all the snow we have. You can have your snow. Ugh. I'm like all
we
snowed out.
We haven't even had like a total, I think, of like 4 inches all winter.
Wow. No.
So they're projecting a lot.
Well, good. It's good for y'all. You know, kills all the bacteria.
I'm
excited. Yeah.
Yeah, I can make snowballs for summer. I'll be happy.
There you go. Put them in the freezer.
Yep. There'll be ice balls, but on 98
ice
days.
Ice balls?
Nice. Yeah, ice balls.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because snow doesn't stay snow in the freezer. It gets, like...
ice. Yeah.
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 But that's... I'll tell you, in 98-degree weather, it's nice to grab one out and put it, like, on your pressure points on your neck or your wrist or something, you know?
You know, stick one in your short?
I've done that, too. But when the dogs get hot, when they go out in the yard for a little bit, I toss them an ice ball and they go off, you know.
And guess what I'm going to be July 4th?
You're going to be in Bermuda.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And it's going to be crazy hot. But I don't care. I'm going to be out of the country and chilling out, and that's it.
It'll be fun.
Oh, hell yeah. Absolutely. But serious heat down there. It would take about a dozen of them snowballs. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I know. Because that one summer, it was so bad here. I went through all my ice balls, and I was taking cold washcloths, throwing them in the freezer. That I have a refrigerator in my garage, you know.
Yeah.
I kept taking them out to wrap them around my neck and stuff. I'm like, what the hell?
My brother just got back from Jamaica, and he came home pretty burnt like a crisp. And the couple they went with, they had cliff diving, you know, and the only one they let the tourists jump off of was like 35 feet high. And my brother's best friend's girlfriend decided to take a go at it. Well, she got black and blue ass cheeks and a nice bruise on the leg, and everybody who jumped it basically got their butts black and blued. You know, you got to stand straight, stiff. You have to hit that water the right way, or it's like, you know, slapping metal.
Right.
But, yeah.
Unbelievable.
You know, it seems that Bill and I have to make another appointment with the chief of police.
Really?
Yeah.
For what?
Well... I won't tell you the names, but two people were given helmet tickets in Oceanside last weekend, and then because of the deal I had, said, didn't the Oceanside police chief agree to stop writing beanie tickets? Your thoughts on how to proceed? Cop told them they were stopped for illegal helmets. So basically, it's the second part of it goes, well, hey. Oceanside PD has never been in my sights, but Philip did go after them a few years ago. Are they willing to fight this, or will they just pay the ticket? And then it says to me, if you are willing to fight, can you provide enough documentation so that they can file a complaint such as the one attached? Which is, I'll give you a synopsis of that. This is an internal affairs complaint. I'm writing this formal internal affairs complaint against officers, da-da-da-da-da, for violating my constitutional rights. Said police department order and settlement terms of entitled the Bay of California versus Jerry Sanders. It also violated terms of a permanent federal injunction issued on May 25th, 1995. On August 19th, I was issued a citation by the above three officers stating my motorcycle helmet was not was not DOT or Schnell approved. There is no legal requirement that any motorcycle helmet be Schnell approved, and the Department of Transportation does not approve helmets. So there is no legal basis for the issuance of this citation other than ignorance or prejudice. If it was issued due to ignorance, then I demand properly train your officers again. If it was issued due to prejudice, I demand discipline or discharge of the offending officers immediately. In addition, notify me the reason for the citation was not correctable, which it is correctable, under the California Vehicle Code of 40303.5, with a disqualifying condition stated in CV 40, 4610. She stated the disqualifying condition was an immediate safety hazard, but they then allowed me to leave wearing the same helmet that, in her opinion, constituted immediate safety hazard. So is it policy to allow an immediate safety hazard to continue? What do you guys think? If they tell you they give it to you for safety hazard, yet here you can put it back on them right away.
That's crazy.
Yep.
How can you pull somebody over and write?
Well, they
up?
Have a habit of doing that here, and for a while it's.
But it's like a setup for disaster. It's like, okay, I'm going to pull you over. I'm going to write you this citation, but. Here, put your helmet back on and take off down the road so, you know, several other people can also pull you over and do the same thing or whatever. You know, that don't make no sense.
Yeah, well, if they want to fight the ticket properly, they can send me a copy of the transcript, minute order, or any other document you can find, get from them, from the court or the cops. So I say assert your rights now. But in the best case scenario, the defendants, like I got an audio tape of mine. And you can get the clerk's transcript, and it has the name of the parties, the judge, the date, what documents were entered into evidence, and disposition. But yeah, it's they're started again. And I've seen one guy today, and I've never seen him before. That's probably the guy that did it. I can't read his name on the ticket.
I don't know. It sounds like they got to get there. T's and Q's and Y's all together, you know, the right way when it comes to people riding motorcycles, because I don't know. I think your state's too big. Too big and too many rules, man.
Well, yeah.
They need to chop the state up into a couple of pieces and, you know, reroute the law enforcement people.
Well, you know, here, I got one for you. It's interacting with police employees. Always document exact exchanges and you have with police or those who you witness, preferably via video, if possible. Even better, stream the interaction in real time to the internet using a free smartphone application, which I can put that app up in the chat room right now. But yeah, you can basically you can record them. There's no law. There's seven. You know, I put up the thing for seven reasons on how you can record them and not get in trouble.
Yeah, but can't you just, like, if they pulled you over for a routine traffic stop, can't you just say, look, I'm going to record this whole incident just to make sure your rights and my rights are violated? You know.
And what are you going to do when he tells you to turn it off? I don't give you permission.
Yeah, but there's cameras everywhere. They have cameras on poles, lights.
Wait,
you know?
Wait. What are you going to do if he tells you I don't give him my permission?
Call the night watchman. I don't know. I mean, it's either shut up and not anything more, or it's you ask for his higher
authority. Here you don't need their permission.
Oh, okay, so you would need to find out if your state...
The only time you cannot do record them with a video...
Is when they're undercover.
If they're undercover, taking a piss, or walking into the house where the address is shown.
All right, and that's in the state of California, so you would need to check your state if it's okay?
Right.
Okay.
See, because filming your interactions has several advantages. Most importantly, it will help you to safeguard you that at that moment. It is very likely will deter potential aggression and will act as an indisputable, objective, transparent record of the incident. The deck is usually stacked against you in cases which come down to just your word against theirs. So you ask, am I being detained? This question is important for several reasons. One is that certain rules regarding the evidence can be collected or are dependent on whether you have been officially detained or whether the person stopping you has sufficient cause to detain you in the first place. Getting them on record regarding these issues can aid you greatly in the future if contesting such evidence becomes necessary. The reason to ask this is if it will serve as an indicator to the police employee you are interacting with that you are aware of your rights. While this doesn't always make a difference, letting them know that you understand those rights and are willing to assert them will sometimes make them less likely to disregard them. If you told them no, then you can leave the scene. If you're told no, you can leave the scene. Sometimes discretion is a better part of valor. If you're told yes, stay calm, cool, and collected. You can choose to remain silent or you can choose to engage. Police employees default on being the offensive, strive to be calm and collected while confident, knowing that you're not acting in the wrong and in fact is the way acting it is they who are acting hostile. Ask yourself what is reasonable. Always strive to de-escalate situations and thus increase the likelihood you'll leave under your own violation or volition rather than under the control of a stranger. Will also allow those who may later view the video of the interaction to easily and clearly see just who is the aggressor. Video recording means that facts can be shared immediately with a large number of people, and you can move more quickly to the next stage, thus making it more likely they'll support you if needed and be more likely to speak out against injustice themselves. Police employees can and do lie, something that courts have ruled is perfectly acceptable in an attempt to solicit information from you to get you to admit or engaging in an action they believe gives them the right to kidnap and cage you, even though said action may not cause the victim. Be aware of this and act accordingly. In fact, police employees are actually trained in methods of deception designed to trick people into giving up their rights or cooperating against themselves or their friends. They are taught to act friendly if they want to keep you in order to gather information, which eventually could be used against you or others. In addition, they are instructed to phrase out questions in a way that sound like statements. I'm going to search you, okay, in order to trick you and to give you consent. If you do engage, answer questions with questions, which is what I always say. Ask, where is the victim? Why do you believe you have the right to prevent my freedom of movement, etc.? Treat the police employee no differently than with someone not wearing the same costume who approached and questioned you. Now, if you get arrested, police employees often make arrests they know to be without merit simply as a way to harass those who question their authority. Several vague go-to charges are often used for such purposes, including but not limited to disturbing the peace, trespassing, obstruction, interfering with an officer investigation, failure to follow lawful orders, etc. Cases involving police brutality, charges of resisting arrest or assaulting an officer can often be used to justify the police employees' use of force, having the unbiased and unimpeachable witness that video represents is especially crucial in this instance. So you got all that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. They know there is usually very little chance they will be held accountable for such tactics. In most cases, the charges are later dismissed, but that doesn't eliminate the time and indignities suffered by their victims during even a brief period within one of their cages. Pushing back against this culture of abuse is important to both protect your rights and deter future against others. Like Bill and I always say, don't panic, the world won't end. Now is the time to engage in damage control and move forward to mitigate any further harassment to seek accountability for the real aggressors. Write down a detailed summary of what unfolded, create an objective overview that will bring someone totally unfamiliar with the incident up to speed. May have an inclination to put this off until later, but it's actually very important to do so while the incident is fresh. What am I talking about?
Nora could go first.
filing an internal affairs complaint. Plus, you'll see, just so
you're
you...
hitting, and then what?
Go ahead.
No, I didn't hear what you said.
I said, I read it, and I said, what you're pushing back against this culture of abuse is important to both protect your own rights and deter species against others. Don't panic. The world won't end. Now is the time to engage in damage control and move forward to mitigate any further harassment as you seek accountability for the real aggressors.
The problem is, and I don't mean to cut you off, that a couple of the things that you've said, I've done, and guess what it's gotten me? Two cops swing me around and cuff me. They don't care, you know? And I mean, I'm grateful for the fact of, okay, you do have rights and you can do this and you can do that, but 90% of the time, they still don't care. And that's the part that just burns in me. I totally understand what some of the things you're saying, but what about what they do anyways and they never get in trouble for?
Yeah. But, you see, what I said, if you fill out an IA complaint and then whoever else gets hassled, this is where you got to do a little research. And everybody that gets hassled fills out an IA complaint. It's just like if 10 people got a ticket, 9 are going to pay it, 1's going to fight it. So that's the mentality you got to overcome to fill out the complaints. The more complaints that are submitted, unless you do what Bill and I did, get a meeting, go into a room, they turn the heat up, guy's wearing a winter coat with a red dot on the lapel. So what does that tell me? He's recording us.
Right.
So I reached into my pocket and I started recording them.
You know, because it's just like, you know, the whole answer a question with a question. You know, I mean, I can recall one time in particular, I began to do that and started reading the Riot Act on what my rights were, et cetera, et cetera. And I had 2 male cops spin me around and cuff me and send me on my way. And it just was one of those things. Didn't matter what I said, what I knew was right, what I knew was wrong, they didn't care. Not one bit.
Well, you know, it's like when you fill out the complaint, you can also fill out a Freedom of Information Act. What you do with that is you ask them how many tickets they wrote in the last year, how the officers were trained, you know.
Well, I mean, I was so pissed off at the fact, I just said, fuck it, and became really nasty and very verbal at the point in time. And I don't know, it went bad. The whole thing went bad. But in the end, I never got charged with anything. But that's besides the point. I was screaming for everybody above the officer that, you know, put the cuffs on me and then some. And then when I got to the higher-ups, I was so aggravated that it was just like, fuck you, get away from me, you know? I don't know. It's one of them things, I guess.
Yeah. Well, Sherry in Tennessee says she can't hear more than a minute at a time. So I suggest you just try and refresh and see what happens. But it's called the Freedom of Information Act. And request, or better yet, have a friend or company who can film you turning it in. Ask for a receipt or a signed dated stamp copy of your Freedom of Information Act request. What I do is I write 2. I give them 1, the date stamp and time, and I give them the other 1 that they can keep.
So everybody has a copy, and there's no I lost the paperwork.
Right.
Okay.
You know, they have up to like here it's 6 months to get a hold of you, but they can charge you also for any, you know, they can charge you for any documents or anything. So I always put a little disclaimer on the bottom that if I got to pay for these, I will, you know, just let me know how much and all that shit. But if you've done nothing wrong, don't, Don't be afraid. Instead, voice as loudly and clearly as you can the rights violations you suffered and continue to face due to actions of police, employee, or prosecutor. And what I do is I get a jury trial. You can...
Yeah, they don't like it when you push it towards a jury trial. Over here they don't. 9 times out of 10, it'll be dismissed before it gets to that point.
Right.
Or the people who don't know any better will...
But I don't want it dismissed. I want my day in court.
Well, they'll just take the whatever the DA's trying to push on them, you know. But the smart ones will push towards a trial, and usually it doesn't get that far. So...
Somebody blowing their nose?
Who?
No.
No. Well. No, it's... There's another one. I'm going to put this one up there. It's a group. And we know that badges don't grant extra rights. And I'll put that up in the chat room, too. They're jacking with us. They're ready. Things are running. Things are running slow.
Mm.
But yeah.
It's always something. You'd think they'd get a day off.
You know, it's like, you know, I got that thing I always post about know your rights when dealing with police.
Yep.
So basically, they hate to hear these words. Am I free to go? I do not consent to a search. I'm going to remain silent. So, you know, they have to have a specific reason to suspect your involvement in a specific crime or should be able to tell you the reason, that reason when you ask. This is known as reasonable suspicion. A officer usually will pull over some for some type of track violation, such as speeding or not using your blinker, which that happened, the blinker one happened to me a couple weeks ago. He actually thought it was my son driving a car till I told him, No, I'm not my son. And I said, am I free to go? Am I being detained? He said, well, I wanted to ask you some questions. And I said again, am I free to go? And he said, you're free to go. I drove away. They followed me all the way down the freeway.
Oh, my God. He gave you a personal escort. Hey, I'm going to have you know I've used your saying like 8 times this week.
Which one?
Well, let me get to that. And I always say, in the words of the great Phil, and they're like, and then my friend says, is that the dude you do the radio show with? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, that's his show. And they're like, okay, what's he say? I'm like, if you bend over once, you're going to bend over twice. And a couple of my friends were like, wow, ain't that the truth? I'm like, no shit. I'm like, that's why it applies to this conversation.
Yeah, because, you know, there's 5 things you need to know about protecting yourself. Number one is safety. The first thing is your safety. You want to put the police officer at ease. Pull over to a safe place, turn off your ignition, stay in the car, and keep your hands on the steering wheel. At night, turn on the interior lights. Keep your license, registration, and proof of insurance always close by. Build a trust with the officer to be a good citizen. Be courteous, stay calm, and smile. Don't complain. Show respect and say things like, sir and no, sir. Fuck that. Never badmouth the police officer. Stay in control of your words, body language, and your emotions. All this takes practice. Try practicing with a friend. The idea is to get the police officer to understand that you're just an average, ordinary citizen and let you go on your way down the road. Never touch a police officer and don't run away.
The problem is that when they pull you over, they should treat you as an average, ordinary day citizen and not automatically assume because you're wearing a leather vest or you're wearing pink polka dots, whatever, that something else has gone wrong.
I had 2 days before that last was coming home, and my son and my daughter were in his truck coming home. They followed him all the way to the house. Then when I came down around the corner, the guy pulled me over, and he said to him, "Does your mother know you're playing policeman?" How fucking young he looked.
Oh, that's funny, because the dude that gave me a hard time, the one I was just referencing to, by the time they got me to the station, and like I said, I was being very verbal, I looked at the lieutenant. Now, this is somebody I went to school with, because, like, this little town, everybody that's in the cop shop, basically, you went to school with. And I looked at him, and I'm like, really, guy? I'm like, this redheaded monster over here is a freaking rookie. And I'm like, this is why all this shit happened, because he doesn't know respect, you know? But I should have known that line. It would have been great for the occasion.
Yeah, Sherry said she had to go because she can't, the sound's fading in and out on her. But, Sherry, Stormy Montana's mom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, I'll put this other link up in the chat room. It's about your rights. Supreme Court says never talk to a policeman. But, the Supreme Court says never to speak to an officer. Washington, the Supreme Court retreated from strict enforcement of the famous Miranda decision on Tuesday, ruling that the crime suspect's words could be used against him if he failed to clearly invoke his rights, clearly and instead answer a single question. In the past, the court has said the burden rests on the government to show that a crime suspect has knowingly and intelligently waived his rights. But in a 5-4 decision on Tuesday, the court said that a citizen must invoke his rights. If he fails to do so, anything he says can be used to convict him, justice said. Justice Anthony M. Kennedy wrote that police were not required to obtain a waiver if the suspect's rights remain silent before interrogating him. In this case, Michigan police had informed the suspect of his rights, including the right to remain silent. He said he understood, but he did not tell the officer he wanted to stop the questioning or speak to a lawyer. But he sat in chair and said nothing for 2 hours and 45 minutes. At that point, the police are asked, "Do you pray to God to forgive you for shooting that boy down?" "Yes." Thompson said it and looked away. He refused to sign a confession and speak further, but he was convicted of first-degree murder based largely on his one-word reply. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals overturns Thompson's conviction on the grounds that the use of incriminating answer violated his right against self-incrimination under the Miranda decision. The Supreme Court reversed that ruling to a lower court ruling and reinstated the conviction. A suspect who has received and understood the Miranda warnings and has not invoked his Miranda rights waived the right to remain silent by making an uncoerced statement to the police. He was joined by Justice John Roberts and Justice Anthony Scalia, Clarence Thomas, and Samuel A. Alito. The court ruled that an ambiguous situation be treated in favor of the police. Justice Sotomayor, in his dissent, longer than the majority opinion, argued that the majority misread the precedent and reached beyond the facts of the case to impose a tough new ruling against defendants. Today's decision turns Miranda upside down. Criminal suspects must now unambiguously invoke the right to remain silent, which, counterintuitively, requires them to speak. The majority ruling is in line with the position taken by the Obama administration and Supreme Court nominee, U.S. Solicitor General Alina Kagan. In December, she filed a brief on the side of the Michigan prosecutors and argued that the government need not prove the suspect expressly waived his rights. She said, "If a suspect knows and understands his Miranda rights, anything he say can and will be used against him in court." Cops lie.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I just went silent. I thought, holy crap, here we go again.
Yeah.
You know, every time I've tried to use that Miranda right, I land up getting verbal. I scream, "I'm not going to say anything." And then I land up sticking my foot in my mouth.
That's why you need to remember that cotton you put in your ears, sometimes you stick it in your mouth.
Yeah, no doubt.
But, yeah,
that's something
lie. The what?
I said they don't lie.
They don't lie?
No.
Yeah, right.
What's that clicking noise?
I'm typing.
No, I heard you typing. This is something totally different. It almost sounds like a record skipping.
No. But I got Mike P's new song, I Am the Darkness.
Liz!
I like this.
Yeah, that's a good tune. I like it a lot. I didn't see the show. I think the show's useless, but, you know.
Oh, you like me. I'm sorry. Like I said in the beginning, I just can't support that show. It's just a bunch of malarkey.
Here we go.
Having that clicking noise going on.
I know, they just knocked out the studio.
Nice.
Let's see. There we go. Yeah, that's what that clicking is. Hello, Eunice. Hello. You guys there?
We're here.
Yeah.
You said hello, Eunice. We were waiting for her to say hello.
Yeah.
Being I called her Erna earlier.
Well, she's there, but...
Eunice, take the mute button off.
Yeah, she's there. I don't know. Let me see. Yeah, I got her unmuted. I don't think she fell asleep.
Huh.
I've done that once on the phone. That was, like, really crazy.
Yeah.
The only time I ever fell asleep on the phone, I think, was after surgery, and I was on medication. I just kind of copped the nod, and I woke up when the phone hit the floor. That was it.
I did that one time. I was on the phone with my dad, but I was so tired. I only had like a couple hours of sleep, and next thing you know, it was like I woke up and the phone was in my hand. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that.
Isn't that great?
Isn't
that
Well, you know, I got this thing. Somebody asked me to play it the other day, and I forgot about it, but I'll do it tonight. But it's If I Were the Devil by Paul Harvey. So let me do this, because we're still getting that click. I'm getting that clicking on this end. But let me do this.
Cool.
If I were the devil. If I were the devil. If I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness. I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree. Thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the...
Hang on. They're playing games with that.
Well, should we play tic-tac-toe?
No. Yeah. This should be good right here. There we go.
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, the... So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old, I would teach to pray after me, our Father, in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who want it until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned. Swinging is more fun. that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys heard this one, but you know, Reagan warned us about Obama.
Now, one side in this campaign has been telling us that the issues of this election are the maintenance of peace and prosperity. The line has been used, we've never had it so good.
I won't have to worry about putting gas in my car. I won't have to worry about paying my mortgage. You know, if I help him...
Yep, there's no other Jack with us again.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hey, you woke up.
But I have an uncomfortable feeling that this prosperity isn't something on which we can base our hopes for the future.
The key point I'm making right now is that the economy is moving in a positive direction.
And yet our government continues to spend $17 million a day more than the government takes in.
You're telling me we got to go spend money to keep from going bankrupt? The answer is yes, I'm telling you.
We've raised our debt limit 3 times in the last 12 months. And now our national debt is 1.5 times bigger than all the combined debts of all the nations of the world.
We're going to raise the debt limit. We always have. We will do it again.
We have $15 billion in gold in our treasury. We don't own an ounce.
I have been informed by that the majority plans to block consideration of this amendment, which is number 1367, regarding the transparency at the Federal Reserve.
Foreign dollar claims are $27.3 billion.
It's said that China has now surpassed Japan as the U.S. government's largest creditor, owning at least 10% of all U.S. debt, perhaps as much as $700 billion.
And we've just had announced that the dollar of 1939 will now purchase 45 cents in its total value.
President Obama is expected to face tough questions over the U.S. decision to pump $600 billion freshly printed dollars into its economy. Now, the move is an attempt to revive the country's finances, but will result in a devaluation of the dollar.
We're at war with the most dangerous enemy that has ever faced mankind in his long climb from the swamp to the stars.
We've got to give them a stake in creating the kind of world order that I think all of us would like to see.
And it's been said if we lose that war, and in so doing lose this way of freedom of ours...
You'll construct a legal regime to make indefinite detention legal.
History will record with the greatest astonishment that those who had the most to lose did the least to prevent its happening. Well, I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the Founding Fathers.
For some trips, it'll be faster than flying. Without the pat-down.
Anna was picked to go through. Pretty much everybody except the baby was picked to go through the scanner.
If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.
Damn America! That's in the Bible!
Whether we believe in our capacity for self-government or whether we abandon the American Revolution and confess that a little intellectual elite in a far distant capital can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them ourselves.
I've got a core set of values that I think have to be advanced, and that my individual salvation depends on our collective salvation.
You and I are told increasingly we have to choose between a left or right. Well, I'd like to suggest there is no such thing as a left or right. There's only an up or down.
We had an election, and it was about a direction for our country.
And regardless of their sincerity, their humanitarian motives, those who would trade our freedom for security have embarked on this downward course. In this vote harvesting time, they use terms like the Great Society. Or, as we were told a few days ago by the president, we must accept a greater government activity in the affairs of the people.
E pluribus unum, out of many, one.
In the end, that's what this election is about.
Well, the trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
Over the course of 10 years, it would cost what it would cost us. All right. Okay. We're going to. It would cost us about the same as it would cost.
Yep.
Now.
Hello.
Hey.
Yeah. Hey. What's up there?
Hey.
You? How you doing?
I'm doing better. Much better, believe me.
Uh-huh.
Meaning, you know, the cough's gone.
Right.
I feel, you know, a lot better.
Good.
Thank you for asking.
Good. Everybody was worried about you.
Yeah. It was a long haul.
Uh-huh.
I was sick since New Year's Eve, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A long time.
Eunice,
long time.
I thought about you this weekend, Eunice.
Oh, did you?
I watched on, not to deter off what we're talking about, but I watched a documentary on HBO on the On Demand,
mm-hmm.
and it was about Father Murphy, who was head of St. John's School of the Deaf. And
yeah.
there were six deaf men who did this movie, brought things to light, or so to say, and they told their story. And, of course, they could only sign, and you would hear a narrator interpret what they were saying. And they were older men now, and I would say in their 60s at least.
Right.
And I was horrified at some of the stuff that they were saying and people that they brought onto this movie to give statements and different things like that. And I just was... like, they put a monster in the hands of deaf children, and I just was appalled, you know? And, I mean, you know it exists. You know what's
yep.
going on and stuff. But to, like, hear these grown men and their stories and what they thought, because they were sheltered children, and back then, you know, they said it. They, like, deaf people were considered dumb back
right.
then. Put in the category of almost like severe mental illness. And, you know, they were saying we're not mentally ill, it's just we were deaf. And this man went so far as to prey upon the fact that he targeted the boys that whose families couldn't sign and the boys who couldn't write yet. So he was the only interpreter between them and the parents. That would only come up for, like, holidays or a special occasion, because this was a school these kids went away to. They could not escape this man.
Right.
And I was just like, oh, my God. Yeah, it made me so angry just watching that, because I've done work with the deaf kids, as a matter of fact. And, I mean, if there wasn't a moment in time where I just started wanting to punch things, it was right then and there. I couldn't believe what I was watching.
You know, and people to this day still says and still ask the question, aren't some of them making up the stories to get money? Who in God's name would put their life of hell out there?
That's the truth. That's the truth. And the thing is that the several individuals who made this documentary for HBO, when they turned Father Murphy in to the authorities, or
right.
the authorities wanted nothing to do with it, swept it under the rug. They went so
yeah.
far to the courthouse, to the DAs, and because they were deaf, they handed out flyers to everybody with Father Murphy's picture on it, saying that, you know, the DA's
he
office
sexually abused him. Yeah.
And handed out to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And it's only when they pushed that point that something was done. And it made me so angry. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, because that just tells a story of a couple of people, you know, in particular. It doesn't tell every single child that went to this school's journey, you know,
right.
that possibly could be sitting with their mouth shut,
you know, because they just want to talk about it or whatever. But it did. It's like how you pray on kids with disabilities, you know. It's like that's just beyond my – I just didn't know.
It hit you right in the gut, doesn't it?
Yeah, because I've done respite work. I've worked with the mentally impaired. I've worked with deaf children. And to watch this was like somebody driving a stake through my back. It was horrible, horrible. I just was dumbfounded, you know.
Well, you listen to this when you take – a 5 or a 6 year old or a 7 year old, and you know, the priest at that time were, you know, the hierarchy. You know, you wouldn't dare talk about a priest or a teacher or a doctor or anybody
right.
doing
and
these things.
That's what these kids were saying, and they were saying that, you know, because of being sheltered from being deaf. And they would go there at such a young age. When things happened to them, they thought that they were handpicked.
Handpicked, right. And that's what I was going to say.
Yeah,
it was
a special thing that was happening to them because they
right.
didn't know. And
right.
that made me even more angry.
Well, children, now they do, but back then, children, you know, 5, 6, 7, maybe even 8 years old, didn't even know what sex was.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
But when they pray on you and they say, especially a priest, you know, you have a brother that's in jail and he's got the devil in him, you know, and I'm going to protect you. I love you enough that I'm going to protect you.
What
we're
the hell?
Don't worry about it.
Oh, all right.
And we're gonna get the devil out of you, and the only way that I can do that is suck it out of you.
Yeah.
You know,
no,
I mean, it's you know, that's a true story. You know, and
but you know what they shed some light on, which I didn't even know. Okay, and I mean, I'm Catholic, which I've said before on the show. The Pope that's retiring right now. For the past, until he became a pope, okay, the 25 years before he became pope, he worked.
You know what he did?
He's the one who kept all the records on all the pedophiles and the sexual misconduct and the rapes that were happening in the Vatican.
He was even accused of it.
Oh, see, that they didn't say. They said that he was an expert in the field, that he knew every single case in and out, because I guess at that moment in time, Pope John Paul II wanted every case brought to his desk personally by Pope Benedict, you know, because he wanted no more, I guess, like shoved aside in the archives or whatever. But they also had on the show this monk who left the priesthood. He was a psychologist who was paid by the Vatican to go in and assist priests that possibly would fall from, you know, their vow of chastity. And he was supposed to counsel them. And when he determined that 50%, now that's half, we all know what 50% is, that 50% of the priesthood was not practicing the vow of chastity. And he said it was either with them molesting and raping children or they were having affairs with women on the side. Now, 50% is a large margin. And he left when he found out, after he was counseling these men to try to get them their heads back on straight, I guess, whatever, he found out that they were being shuffled through the system. If someone was in Rhode Island, they moved them out to California and vice versa. And that's when he left. And he's, you know, he's a normal citizen. But they have this guy on the show, and he was just spilling it all out, all the work he had done as a young man.
Well, I just got some documents. I can't tell you how I got them, but I got some documents of what the Pope wrote up on the pedophilia and how they're supposed to handle it.
Yeah, well, they said on the show up until it blew wide open in America that was supposed to be, they had money put aside and it was to pay the people and you get them to write off that they're going to keep their mouth shut if they push
right
to the point of having
a lawyer. It was all worked out. It was all, you know, they protected within their own to make sure that they never came out in a newspaper article or a court document that there was sexual misconduct going on within the Catholic Church system.
So why do you think this bill is so important in Boston?
Yeah,
because
I know.
Those are the things that they changed in that window.
Yep.
That from now on, the priest's face would be put right in the police station among the others, which
yeah.
they should be. You know, that's why it's so fucking important, you know, that it's done.
When I was watching this, the only, you know, I was, all I could think about was you and, you know, your fight and your cause. And I burned in me. It just really, really did, because a lot of the stuff that they were talking about are things that, you know, I didn't know. Like, I've learned a lot from you over the past couple of months on the radio. And this documentary shed light on a couple of things that I didn't know neither. And, you know, it's like I never wanted to question my faith as being a Catholic, you know, because I know there are bad apples every way you go. But
yeah.
it makes me question so much, you know. And I was never put in that corner, or so to say, about questioning my faith until I watched this show over the weekend. And then I was I was appalled.
You know, I questioned my faith a long time ago.
Right.
But I truly believe in my heart that you have to go to the surface and blame the people in charge and the person that did it. You
right.
can't blame God for it. I mean, I learned a long time ago, no matter what faith that you have, if you don't have something to believe in, you know, where do you go? You become like a numb person, like the rest of them, you know?
Right.
See, they had, if you ever, when I did the deposition,
yeah,
all right, and I sat there, if you could have, there was no, when we went to the Diocese of Worcester, Carmen Dursel and I went to the Diocese of Worcester to present our case so they could investigate it, you know?
Yeah.
The bishop and six Monsignors sat there with no emotion in their eyes at all. There was only one Monsignor that did.
Well,
you
they brought up Cardinal Law, too, who, you know,
right.
he was cited in the Boston area, and they said his part in all of this was for them to scoop him back out to Rome, have him finished the last couple of years in a rich, fancy church, which was part of the Vatican, to do Sunday services, and he had
right.
a nice stipend to sit back on because he did what he was, quote-unquote, ordered to do. So he was rewarded for keeping everything silent.
Well,
and
there was a warrant out for his arrest. There was a warrant out for Cardinal Law's arrest.
Yeah,
you know, to testify in some of these big cases. From what we heard in the investigations that we had done was he was warned by the FBI. And the Vatican found out about it and they pulled him out because they have immunity.
Yes, exactly.
The Vatican.
That's
you can't bring them back, you know.
Yep, that's the point that they were getting at on the show, you know, that him covering up so much horrific stuff that took place in the state of Massachusetts, you know, we can bring up several other areas, but just in the state of Massachusetts, he was rewarded for keeping everything under the rug. And it made
you got to understand one thing. They have a boss, too, and they were told they could not open their mouth.
Right.
I mean, some people, I've met a couple of priests that told the Catholic religion to go to hell, that they couldn't tolerate it, and they spoke at the State House.
Right.
But you've got, in that Judiciary Committee, all your representatives there are defense lawyers and Catholics, and that's where you get the fighting of the insurance companies, the lobbyists, the Catholic Church, Now it's gone into non-profitable organizations like hospitals and stuff like that because they have found that doctors have molested children and the whole nine yards, you know. That.
But you know what? You know what gets me even more, Eunice? The fact that these men on the show too said the nuns took care of all the kids in the dorms. They supposedly were like the mother figure, and when Father Murphy would come in there, they would turn their head the other way and leave the room. So they were just as guilty. They were
of
letting.
Of course. And do you know how many nuns had babies?
Yeah.
I mean, it's these people killed their own religion.
Yes.
Years ago, they killed their own religion. And, you know, I get up, and I haven't done it in a year since I kind of argued with the bishop in Worcester, but I got up, and I was the first lay person to get up in a Catholic church and talk about the sexual abuse by Catholic priests. And he got cut off at the balls for letting me do that. And all of a sudden that was closed down. Because he got his orders from a higher power, you know,
yep.
Like the Pope. So, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, when I say I fight the Catholic Church, I don't fight my faith, which I'm Catholic, and I'll always be Catholic, and I don't need a priest I don't go to confession to a priest. I talk to God every day, you know.
Right.
And I keep telling him to continue to give me the strength and the health so we can fight it and bring it, you know, nationwide. I mean, it's something that has to be brought out and, you know, like I've said before, people only fight for things if it concerns them. And that's sad because more people have to be aware of it.
Yeah.
And if you ask the pedophile, you know, they would honestly say to you that the child come on to them.
Oh, yes, because I've heard that come out of the mouths of a few people that have gone to prison for pedophilia, and
right.
That's exactly what they say, you know.
And they really believe that, you know.
Yeah, they're twisted, and there's no cure
no.
for them.
And
you know?
Never will be.
No.
Never will be, you know. And it's not getting less. It's getting worse.
Yeah, but you
because
know.
The laws are so easy with them, you know.
Other people need to come forward, not just in the Catholic religion, in every aspect, you know. There are several other big religious things out there, too, that, you know, if it's happening in one place, it's happening in another.
Everywhere. It's
exactly.
Just it's still being covered up, you
yeah.
know.
And people need to come forward and squash this shit, you know. They need to, like, fight for their rights and fight for the rights of the people they know that it's happened to, you know. And it's just, like I said, watching that 2.5 hours worth of the
documentation, yeah,
it just like opened my eyes even more to how crazy that was.
Well, wouldn't you think they would put it on national TV?
Yeah,
they would never do it. They would never do it because the insurance companies, and why I say insurance companies, is because the Catholic Church has big policies with them. Big policies. And the insurance companies took over this country years ago. Totally years ago. And see, I like fighting big people like that. Because what can they do to a person to me? You know, what can they do to me? You know, really, what can they do to me? 71-year-old woman, what, are they going to give me a ticket driving down the street? Or follow me around? I wish they would, you know. So, but I'm glad you watched that document. I missed that, I you know, and I was going to watch it myself. But I've seen many documents that would make you totally sick. And people to this day still say, nah.
Nah, it blew my mind. It totally blew my mind.
You know, so. Billy, you still there?
Yeah.
How you doing? How's the baby?
Good. She just had her 6-month checkup. She's doing great.
Is she? Oh, good. Good. Get big?
Yep.
Well,
yeah.
My grandson went to court Friday.
Uh-huh.
And they wanted to give him 10 to 20 years, Phil.
Wow.
But the judge said this boy has never been in trouble before, and I will not give him a sentence like that.
Uh-huh.
So they gave him 3 years and 1 day.
Wow.
So you know that he's going to do the 3 years.
Yeah.
But they let
what
him
about,
go home. He's
what
turn
about
himself.
Good,
huh?
What about good time?
Nope. See, when you get 3 years in 1 day,
yeah,
no matter how much good time you have, and you know, you have to do the 3 years.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Why when people get sentenced for life imprisonment with 1 day, that means they'll never get out. You know.
Okay.
So, I mean, if you have somebody that gets 5 sentences with 1 day, and this is stuff that I have learned over the years, you know. You can't go up for probation. You know, you have to do the time. And, you know, it was a long time learning all this stuff, so. But I was kind of glad I wasn't there. I cried all day Friday. Crying's good for you. There's nothing I can do. We've done the best we could, and he was wrong in what he did. And I'm not making excuses for him, but he's just going to have to do the time now. That's all, and try to get his life straightened out.
Yeah.
You know, what else can you do? You know, my daughter's devastated. But the lawyer had prepared them ahead of time, you know.
Uh-huh.
He's lucky he got that. He's lucky he had the judge that he had. If he had other judges, they wouldn't give a shit. They would have given him 10 to 20 years. So, and then he'll have to be on probation for 3 years after that.
Wow.
So. But the kid that he stabbed, the family was very politically inclined.
Uh-huh.
Very politically inclined, and that's why they pushed for all this shit, you know. But you know something? People like that, especially when they know their own kid was whacked out on drugs, and he's the one that started the fight.
Yeah.
It'll come to him, you know.
Oh, yeah. And life
has not that I wish it on them. But, you know, this kid, he's never going to give up drugs because he had no punishment for it. So he's going to just say to himself, well, I got away with it, you know. And he's going to fuck up, and he's going to fuck up bad. And then he's going to end up in jail, or he's going to end up dead, one or the other. You know, so. And I don't wish it on it. It's just that I've seen it too many times. Too many times in my life have I seen that, so. I have no grudge against this kid because he'll fuck up himself, you know.
Yeah.
We all do. I learned how to get rid of that shit a long time ago.
Well, that's
also,
like,
if I go ahead.
Like today, I put up a couple of things about that TV show, and this is a record. This is the highest I've gone ever. But I got 146,843 hits on my blog today.
What show's that?
The Devil's Ride.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, it's, you know, I got rid of that a long time ago, that kind of anger, because if I had kept it, I would have just went the opposite way.
Mm-hmm.
You know. I had to learn how to forgive the priest that molested my son and
Patrick Murray who killed my son. And wow. I had to do that only so I could forgive myself, Phil, and go on with life, you know, because I'm not the one that has to judge these people.
Yeah.
You know, that's the sad part, you know. I read a book one time, I'm trying to think of the title of it now. It was a rabbi that wrote it. Only Good People Hurt.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever read that book?
No.
Only Good People Hurt. Bad people don't know what feelings are.
Well,
so they don't hurt. Nothing
that,
they do.
Well, you know, and, you know, people around we're on in 48 countries. And everybody's, I mean, getting a lot of traffic about the shows when we talk about the priests.
Yeah.
And right now we got France, Puerto Rico, Australia, Mexico, the Caribbean, Netherlands, Russia, Bulgaria, and Brazil. As well as Japan, Germany, Russia, Sweden, France, and the United Kingdom. New Zealand, Japan.
But the amazing thing, Phil, is you never get a response from that.
Yeah.
Any time we've talked about priests and that, people have never responded to it because they don't want to believe it.
And you know,
they have, huh?
You know, that the show that I watched on HBO also brought to light that when it was publicized in American newspapers that this was an American problem, that's when all of a sudden all the other countries started putting their stuff forward about what they knew and, you know, what had happened with certain groups of people, too.
Right.
Because it was only then, you know, when it was strictly pinpointed as basically America was a bad seed, and that wasn't the case. This was going on around the world, you know, and all of a sudden all kinds of countries started popping up out of the woodwork that it wasn't just in America. It was freaking everywhere. It's everywhere, and it's out of control. And the Vatican just needs to – what they need to do is a clean sweep. Line up all these guys because they even showed – are you ready for this? I don't know if you know about this, but they tried to purchase back in the late 60s. They tried to purchase a small island around Barbados, and the initial intent was to make a retreat there to send all – the priests who were sexual offenders there. And then all of a sudden the Vatican gave word to sell the island, to pull out, and that they were going to put these guys in therapy and reshuffle them throughout the system. And this is the end result, the major mess that is still transpiring to this day.
Do you realize how many thousands and thousands and thousands of children, because this abuse, pedophilia, was way in the 1800s.
Yes, they brought that to light into the show, too. They said that they have archives and archives of stuff that was reported that sealed away in that Vatican that nobody's ever going to get their hands on or be able to look at. But it went back into the 1800s, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Yep, and the Catholic Church was so powerful.
Yeah,
you remember mostly all the other religions except the Jewish faith broke away from the Catholic Church and made their own, you know, their own religion. But they felt that they were so powerful, you know, that how do you think John F. Kennedy got elected as president, the first Catholic? Because there were always Protestants or you know, of another Baptist or another religion that were president.
Right.
You know, the Vatican had a lot to do with that. Money talks.
Oh, yeah.
People walk.
The problem is there'd be all kinds of international red tape, but you know what? They need to obtain warrants and get into some of them archives and get the actual documentation. And then
never happened. You have to sneak them out.
I know that. But you know what? It would happen to anybody else.
You know, if I was accused of a crime like that, the cops would be banging down this door, having the place surrounded. You know what I'm saying? And it's like it should be the same for them, too. I don't give a shit that they're priests, and they're priests that didn't follow their rules. So, therefore, you know, it's even more corrupt.
Well, they made a kiddie land out of the priest and the Catholic religion. It was a kiddie. It was a candy place.
Yep.
Total candy place, you know? I remember meeting with Father Messier and Bishop Harrington when I found this out, and we met at my therapist's office. I was in therapy because of my oldest boy, you know, so we had family therapy.
Right.
And that's how I found out. And I looked at him, and he said to me, "Now this guy came to my house and had supper at my house, okay? Had supper at my house. We'd spent hours talking about stuff."
Right.
And he said to me, "But Eunice," he came on to me, and I got up out of that chair. I says, "What?" And Jay Ryan grabbed me. I says, "What did you say?" I got right into his face. "You're telling me that a six-year-old come on to you?"
Wow.
And you want to see a guy back away from me, you know?
Yep. That's classic pedophile profile, whatever you want to call it. And
yep.
That's 98, I'll say 98%. I'll give 2% not. But 98% of them that are predators say that. And, you know, a large margin of the priesthood consisted of those type of predators that should be put away for life. We're not talking like a fall from grace. We're talking about people who
and that's going to happen. That is eventually going to happen because it has started to happen. And guess what? They would never make it in prison because they'd be killed.
Well,
we've already had one that was killed, you know?
Well, what about Father Geegan there? He took his own life. He couldn't handle it on the inside. You know, and
No, he was murdered.
He was murdered? I thought he killed himself.
No, he was murdered.
But he had hundreds of kids who he molested, that guy there.
Well,
that was,
you added up. You know, I did it as a count, just for my own safety, you know, my own sanity. Father Messier had at least 2,000 kids.
Oh my God!
Wow.
And that's it's numbers like that blew me away about this deaf school, because at the time there was only 3 other schools in the country that catered to deaf children. So do you know how many thousands of little boys and little girls who weren't mentally impaired, they were just deaf, walk through the halls of St. John's Deaf Academy, and were at the hands of this man. And it just burned.
I told you, it was a candy shop, you know?
Yep.
A lot of these places were candy shops.
You know,
and I
told my mother, because when I was 8 years old, I used to play the organ for my church. And I said to her, I'm like, "Ma," I'm like, "even countless hours I spent with the father of our church. And you know what? I thank God now that he was, to me anyways, a decent man. You know,
you're a girl.
Yeah, but you know something? They came out with it on the show that there were just as many girls as there were boys.
But that's not pedophilia. There's two different things. Pedophilia means boys, not girls. A lot of people say to me, you know, because I haven't done it for a while, but I used to do a lot of speaking engagements on this. And I would tell them many girls were sexually abused by priests. But it's totally, not that, don't get me wrong when I say this. Pedophilia, they just want boys. So you were very lucky. And there are a lot of good priests, don't get me wrong. I have many friends that are very dear priests. They you know, they might have an alcoholic problem, you know, because a lot of them drink. But,
right.
Yeah.
You know.
But what was funny is this one had his hunting dogs on the back of the monastery or whatever it is, the little house they live in on the side of the church, and he used to hunt every year. Because I went to the school that was part of the church growing up, and we would see him leaving for his 2-week vacation every year, and he was heading up north to go hunting. And he'd come back with deers strapped to the top of his 4x4, you know. But we were just all dumbfounded standing there in the schoolyard, you know, like, wow, a priest who hunts, you know. But
you know, and they prey on a lot of poor people, children.
Yeah.
So they would be, you know, if it was brought up, they would say, oh, you know, we're sorry this happened. Let us help you, you know. So they got thousands of dollars to keep their mouth shut. But it wasn't their body that, you know, it wasn't up to them. And so as the years went on, because, you know, when something terrible happens to you, you bury it in the back of your head. And it's not, I told you I'm doing this book, and I go back to the flashbacks, you know, like I started out on July 31st writing the book. And going back to why I got so involved in this, you know, why I continued the fight. Some people just would totally give it up. But by writing this book, do you know how many things I forgot that I got the flashbacks when I was writing? I remember getting on the bus after I found out that my son had been sexually abused. I had to take 2 buses. I don't remember getting on the bus.
Yeah, that happens when you experience powerful trauma or something.
Yeah,
that
I don't remember getting it on. I mean, it was just, you know, a lot of things that I totally forgot over the years that was brought back to mind as I'm writing this book, you know. And I'll tell you something, and I'm not patting myself on the back, but if I didn't have my God to pull me through all these bullshit, I should have been in the nut house a long time ago. Really. You know, that he gave me the strength. Because the only thing that I'm going to get out of this is saving the children.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's all that I want.
Yeah.
To save our children. Because we have grown men that come in. Some are lawyers and doctors that have done very well in life, and they had buried it so far down that they were in their 40s when they remembered it. You know, and you have a total meltdown. I remember when I had my meltdown, I used to have this dream of this little girl with long pigtails running down this dark corridor and looking over her shoulder, and there was this big gorilla chasing her. I just periodically would have that. If I got stressed out, that dream would come back to me. Oh, that was me, the little girl, trying to get away from the guy that had been sexually abusing me. But you bury it so much. I was 48 years old when I realized that he had sexually abused me at 4.5. And that was my mother's boyfriend.
Wow.
You know, so, I mean, it's, and you bury it. And thank God you're able to bury it. But grown men that have testified at this judiciary committee, you know, that has been, look at the football player, you know, I mean, they just bury that stuff.
Yep.
They have to in order to survive.
Yeah.
And a lot of them don't even know, because they're so young, a lot of them don't even know exactly what's going on until they become older. And then they realize what the hell happened. You know, and that's a horrible thing, too, because they think it's normal, you know, innocence gone, and they think that what's going on is normal until all of a sudden they're a teenager or whatnot, being with friends.
And they finally realize. Well, you know, the priests make them, because I was introduced to some that was still being abused at 13, and they really thought that this priest was totally in love with them. You know, that, you know, they just, not that they were gay, because they weren't. Right. They didn't have the love at home the way this priest had given them the love, you know? And I know that's sick. But,
no, but, you know, it's when that's been going on for years and years and years, you begin to think differently, and it's not the victim's fault. You know, that's just what happens. And it's like the victim's got to go through years and years and years of probably, you know, counseling or whatever to try to get their brain rewired to think the right way, you know, and that's the sad part right there.
Well, I'll tell you, my son, and he even says it to this day, he says, Mom, I had the greatest mom in the world because you protected me and kept telling me that it wasn't my fault and you made sure I got the help that I needed, you know. And back then in the 80s, parents would just slap you across the face if you said a priest did something.
Yeah.
Because they weren't knowledgeable. Nobody was knowledgeable about it.
My grandmother, she died a couple of months ago when she was in her mid-90s. And she was a devout Catholic, you know. And whenever she would read about molestation cases in the paper or different things like that, she would always say, this didn't happen when I was a little girl. And I would tell her, I'd be like, Meme, I'm like, it happened, but people weren't allowed to talk about it because your generation was, you didn't talk about sex. You didn't even talk about the birds and the bees growing up. I'm like, it just was not a topic that you discussed. And she would argue with me. She would say, oh, no, it's we were a different generation. We were a proud generation. I'm like, Meme, don't kid yourself. You know?
Because but they don't want. We have many women in the Catholic Church that devote themselves to the priest. And when another friend of ours, who was a priest, he was a chaplain for the Knights of Columbus, and I had sat down and we talked many times about pedophilia. And I was down here in Florida when I got a phone call from a friend of mine, who was another priest, saying, Eunice, hold on to your hat. And I says, why? He says, Father Bartlett has just been, cannot be a practice priesthood in the Catholic Church anymore because he's a pedophile. So there was Father Mercier, and then there was Father Bartlett, and then it was Father Coonan. These are all priests that I knew, and it was like being raped all over again.
Wow.
How stupid I felt sitting there talking to these priests about it. And here they were, a pedophile. You can't pick them out. You can't pick them out. You know, you just can't. And who more than me that had been, you know, fighting this for so long that was totally, totally shocked. Totally shocked. And we have women, a friend of mine who's a good Catholic, she ran the thrift store for the Catholic Church, you know, for this particular church, and did everything. And to this day, she does not believe that Father Bart did these things. But he always had young boys around him. He always took the teenagers. He even took some of them to Europe, you know,
right?
And that's what they did. They continued staying with him, and he had abused them as children, you know. But and I've said that when I've got up and spoken in the Catholic Church.
You know, the thing is that what are they going to do to correct it? Should the vow of chastity be null and voided? Should they allow priests to
get married? That's not going to cure it.
You know, it's like what they need to do something to correct all of it. You know.
People have asked me that question. Should they get married, you know? They don't want women. That would be putting women through hell. Can you imagine being married to one and coming home and finding them in bed with a 7-year-old kid?
Oh, my God.
That is not going to change the situation. It's a sickness. It's something that, and people have got to realize it. I don't care if they come up with a miracle pill. They will never, ever give it up. ever because it's a sickness.
Maybe they should have hung on to that island and shipped them all out, huh?
That would have been a good idea.
Yeah, I can't even, you know, it blew my mind when they were talking about that. They purchased a small island off the coast of Barbados, and that's where they were going to ship all these priests to and just have them live a life of penance on an island away from everybody. And I was like thinking about, like, I'm like, wow, like a leper colony almost, you know? And then the Vatican pulled out on it. They were like, no, counseling and recirculation, you know? So
why do you think the Pope is retiring?
Yeah, oh,
popes,
yes.
Popes never retire. They die as the Pope.
Exactly.
They die. Phil, we took your show over again.
Okay.
I think he left us.
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay. He's sitting there having a lollipop.
You want to know something? If it was Thursday night and it was Bill, we'd never be able to take. That's why the two shows are so totally different.
Yeah.
You know that, Phil?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's like the politician of the biker world. He's got that voice that just...
Yeah, I'm going to tell you what. He's so smooth that we gave him a doctorate in smoothology. He's got
there
the thing.
Go. That's it.
Got the
he's
thing
like
hanging
the
above
bond.
His top.
How's he feeling?
He said it'll be here Thursday. He's feeling better.
Oh, okay. I know it took me so long to get over it. You know?
Hey, a couple of weeks, not to deter the subject, but a couple of weeks ago, I sat my boy down and had him watch Happy Days with me.
Yeah.
And the Fonz came on, you know, and he's talking to Mrs. Cunningham and doing his thing. And my son says to me, Ma, why is he talking so funny? What's the matter with him? I was like, how do I explain this, that he's the Fonz? He's just cool. It's a 50s thing, you know? And I, like, had to tell him. And he just looked at me and said, well, what makes him so cool? And I'm like, oh, my God, here we go. But I'm like,
that's outdating us, isn't it? You know?
Times have changed.
Oh, God, tell me about it. Tell me about it. And I keep on going like a robot. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I know when I leave here, I got to go back up there and fight until I come back down here. You know, it's like, and I'll fight. There's going to be a big fight when I go back up there. So,
Well, it's raining and it's making the snow go away right now. That
doesn't
mean
what my husband said,
snow on the weekend. Shoot.
But, you know, I'd like to hear, Phil, if you ever get any responses. You know.
Yeah. No, I basically what they're doing is they're downloading the show and listening.
Pardon?
Downloading the show out of the archives and listening.
Oh, okay. You know. But you know, it's amazing because people just don't want to hear about it. You know?
Yeah.
See, they put blinders on.
And
they just, you know, and I realize that they're tired of it, but, you know, they got to realize one thing, that a child is being sexually abused every second.
Yeah.
You know? And people do not pay attention, like I said before, unless it's happened to them or a member of their family.
Yeah.
Then they get wired, you know? And then some just walk away from it. So, you know, they just, well, it's over and done with. What can we do? You know, in other words, it didn't happen to them.
Yeah.
But it happened to their grandchild or the, you know, or somebody's child in their family, and they don't have to deal with it.
That's people's general disposition right there. What can we do? Or if it's not directly in their family, it's they don't want to get involved. They just want to walk away. It doesn't concern them, you know, but it concerns everybody because it may not be, you know, nothing may have happened to them at this moment in time or several weeks from now, but what about a generation from now? You're paving the pathway for your future family members to come. You know, people just don't seem to look at that like that, and they need to.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really do, you know. I mean, it's
we've got to get it to stop, to make every person who's done it, the ones that know about it and the ones that have done it, accountable. And that's what we're trying to do in Boston. Make them accountable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and you've got to, you know. It's a sad case when we have to fight to protect our children, you know. And that shouldn't be the case. Children should come first, because they're going to grow up and they're going to be running this country. You know, you got to give them a break. I learned a long time ago, if you don't know what a nice life is growing up as a child, and I'll give you a prime example. We lived in a three-decker, and I remember in the summertime, and there was a cottage in back of us, and those kids would come out and sit on the porch and eat that watermelon, you know. My mouth would, and I can still picture it. I can still picture me sitting there with the plaid dress that my mother had bought us and my Buster Brown shoes. You remember what Buster Brown shoes were?
Yep, I wore some Buster Brown shoes when I was little.
Right. So, and sitting there watching them eat this watermelon, my mouth would be watering. And I remember saying when I was little, when I get married and I have children, my children will never sit outside and have their mouth water. And I always bought a watermelon. Always.
Yeah.
When the kids were growing up. And what my daughter was probably about 18. She says, Ma, can I ask you a question? I says, what? She says, haven't you ever realized that we would have a piece of watermelon and then we'd have to throw it out? And I says, yeah. She says, please tell me why you buy watermelon all the time.
Wow.
And you know, but it's something, I mean, there's got to be something in your childhood that you've said to yourself, my children will never feel like I feel right now, you know.
Wow.
It's totally amazing. But
well, we got that. I just got the 90-second thing, but two things I wanted to say. One is, you guys all come back Thursday when Bill will be here, and you can all give him kudos. Ask him about his doctorate in smoothology. But the other thing I want to talk about was the movie Dead in Five Heartbeats. It's going to have 16 cities theatrical release. Phoenix in April, the 5th, 6th, and the 7th. Sacramento on May 25th. Denver on Saturday, August 31st, and Sunday, September 1st. And then 13 other cities will be announced in the upcoming weeks. And I'm going to let Mike P. and I in the Darkness take us out. And I'll talk to you guys Thursday.
All right. Good night. Good night, guys.